Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Roth.
We have a fun final hour for you guys. Joseph Fan of NBC Sports Northwest going to join us. For the next hour, we've got three really fun segments, including our weekly game we play every Wednesday called Hype Train. Joe, you're going to like it. It's a great game, and I always have really good opinions, and you're going to realize that very shortly here.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I'm very easy
we'll
to work with. Joe is going to be joining us weekly for the final hour of our show on Wednesdays. Now, next Wednesday, we have a shorter show because of the Mariners, but normally you'll be joining us for hour three of our show. Joe, it's great. It's going to be a great time. Jake can be difficult to work with, but I think that...
Been known to be a little bit of a diva.
He's kind of a diva.
I apologize. I apologize
but
in advance.
I am notoriously just a breeze, and so... This is going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. Are you excited?
I'm fired up. No, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay.
I'm sad that Jake isn't here. I was, you know, fully vaccinated. I'm ready for a Jake Heaps hug in my life. And now I just hear him on my headphones. I saw him quickly on the screen. So I miss you, Jake. But I appreciate both of you guys having me on. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Giving you an air hug now.
Virtual hug right now, Joe. I promise when I am back.
Yes, I needed it. I felt it.
Well, when I'm done, you know, traveling and coming back down to and from San Diego, I promise you we'll get that done. But, yeah, I'm excited to have you on, man. This is going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to hang out on these Wednesdays. And, you know, Joe, I have to get to it in terms of, you know, the sights and sounds, because I unfortunately wasn't able to get to rookie minicamp, and it was unique and different, unlike any other than what you've had in the past or what we're used to. What was it like from your perspective to get out there and to kind of see a rookie minicamp unlike any other?
Yeah, I think from my standpoint, it was good to just be out there,
be outside in the world.
Like my setup at home where I work from home, it's like, my little studio setup is right at the foot of my bed. So I just spend all day sitting in my bedroom. And so, like, it was so nice to be able to get out, see everyone else on the beat. All the interviews and stuff were still over Zoom, but at least just kind of being back up on the berm and watching football was a lot of fun. You could definitely tell, I mean, these are first-timers getting their first taste of the vibes and the energy of a Seahawks practice. Jake, I know both of you guys know the bag drill really well. It starts the practice.
Done it a million times.
Yeah, are hooting and hollering, are going nuts, and guys are tripping over bags. They forgot what the cadence of it is.
Oh, no.
And you've got Aaron Curry and Deshaun Shedd showing them how it's done. And so that was just kind of fun to see. And then just watching them play ball. I mean, it was like an hour and a half each day. It wasn't super competitive. I think they only had one deep for the most part, on both sides of the football. But the big takeaways are what you've already seen, but D. Eskridge is fast.
I was going to ask.
Dwayne Eskridge. We're on a first-name basis. He said, Joe is cool. I go by D. Apparently, no one calls him Dwayne. I know you guys talked to Tim Lester. I talked to him as well for my podcast. It was nothing but D.
By the way, Tim Lester, head coach of Western Michigan.
A delightful human to talk to.
Delightful human. He said he was talking about D, which I'm now I need to remind myself. D running a route.
And I'm pretty sure it's D-E-E, not just like the letter D.
Yeah. Running a route and said he turned the DB around something fierce. And I was like, I love this guy.
Yeah.
I love
something
him so much.
Fierce.
But you know when you talk to a head coach or a coordinator or someone, and you can tell when they really believe in a guy and when they know a guy's a good athlete, but they aren't really co-signing, you can tell that in an interview. I feel like Tim Lester believes in D. Eskridge.
And you saw it, and he beat Trey Brown twice deep. And what also stuck out to me was when Pete Carroll was talking about him, he mentioned his strength and physicality much more than he mentioned the speed. And so, to me, it's like if this is a guy who can be your Swiss Army knife in terms of what he can do horizontally and in the running game, but also take the top off of a defense, I mean, it kind of that is – you see that in the division with Debo Samuel in San Francisco and what Kyle Shanahan's been able to do with him, also a second-round pick. So, good to see him out there and seeing some of the traits that we read about, saw – draft weekend, but then also the big news was Darrell Taylor was there, and a guy who only practiced once leading into that wild card round against the Rams was out there. He's healthy. He's light. He's very thin. He's like 245 right now, wants to get back to 260. But and then also not just that he was playing and that he was present, but where he was playing and playing that Leo spot, that rush end, but also getting some work at the strong side linebacker spot, potentially taking on a Bruce Irvin type role when the Seahawks took him in the first round back in 2012. That was what they envisioned. And so I think it is now it's time for some of these early round picks, both at linebacker and the defensive line. What do you have? How do they fit in together?
And Joe, the big question is, okay, well, this conversation about Daryl Taylor, all right, he's, you know, working dual positions, Leo, which is a pass rushing defensive end for anyone that's wondering what the heck is a Leo. It's, you know, your top edge rusher, your pass rusher on the defensive end. And then Sam linebacker, your strong side linebacker, which is the position that KJ Wright made the transition to last year. And as we all know, played exceptionally well. He's been such a legend here in this town and what he has done here with the Legion of Boom defense and in his own career over the past 10 seasons. And that gets put into jeopardy a little bit in my opinion. Does it for you?
I think it has to. And that's always been kind of the weird, are the Seahawks going to be a better football team with KJ Wright on the roster? Like, yeah, he had one of his best years of his career last year, but there's some awkwardness to it. On his side, he said he wasn't going to take a hometown discount. And he wants to get paid market value. Good for him. He deserves to get paid. He's probably only going to get this. It might be his last payday he gets. Clearly, the market isn't what he hoped it would be for him. But then you look at from the Seahawks side, okay, you bring KJ Wright back. Well, is he going to be a part-time player? Is Jordan Brooks, your first-round pick, going to be a part-time player? You've got this logjam of first, second, and third-round picks with Jordan Brooks, Daryl Taylor, and Cody Barton on the roster. At some point, you've got to get something out of these guys. And so it makes it sort of a tricky scenario where if you believe in these dudes and they're healthy, you gotta let them, you know, give them a shot, and this is the time to do it. So that is what I think is the barrier, one of the barriers to getting KJ Wright back on the roster.
Well, I think it's frustrating to see an embarrassment of riches at safety, at potentially linebacker a little bit, when you are scraping for starting level talent at corner, an area where Seahawks fans, certainly in years past, have been so used to seeing premier talent. What's that group look like right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers, but very uncertain in terms of who's playing there. You assume DJ Reed's starting. He was just so good last year. It would be a shock. I mean, you could argue he's better than Shaq Griffin last year. Is he a better overall corner than Shaquille Griffin? Time will tell. As it was still relatively young in his career, and I'd like to see it one more time before I'm totally bought in on DJ Reed being a Pro Bowl caliber corner. But then across from him, you have Trey Flowers, Akella Witherspoon, and then Trey Brown, I think, would be the top three that you would expect to be competing for that other spot. I wouldn't be surprised if Trey Flowers, if he's unable to win the starting job, he could be a cap casualty or a guy you restructure, much like they did with David Moore a year ago, because he was given that raise for playing time that was just an automatic thing over this offseason. Akella Witherspoon's a total wild card to me. I mean, a guy with all the physical tools. The Niners loved him coming out. I covered the Niners when he got drafted. The DB coach at the time, Jeff Hafley, who's now the head coach at Boston College, raved about the guy's feet. He's going to have the best feet in the NFL. This is a guy with the physicality concerns
are
overrated.
Love the way we talk about players.
Yeah, right.
He's got real, just oily hips.
Oily hips. I don't know where I was going to go with that. yeah, so I don't know what to expect from Akella Witherspoon, because for him, it's all been mental. He's kind of been a mental midget throughout his career, and that's why he was in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse so often. So that is going to be an interesting competition to watch during camp.
Joe, why is the text line telling me to call you Coach Joey?
I don't know.
I don't know. Some people are saying, Stacy, it's Coach Joey. Please refer to him as Coach Joey. I'm not going to. But now I'm curious.
I've coached one team in my entire life. It was before I moved to Nashville.
Are they a group of 35-year-old texters?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I coached Woodinville 6th grade basketball. It's their select team one fall. That's the only time I've ever been Coach Joe, but I was definitely Coach Joe. I wasn't Coach Joey, although I was a Joey all the way through high school, but never
now,
a Coach Joe.
The question is, were you like a Bob Knight out there, or you know, what was your demeanor out there when you were coaching
these
kids?
Were you screaming at kids?
No, I'd always love them up, but I did get a couple technical fouls because, as you can imagine, the referees in those leagues are not the best. And so I wouldn't mind chirping every now and again.
That's
and I kind of enjoyed it.
Jake is experiencing that. His kids are in T-ball, like Little League.
Yeah, Jackson is 4, and we're just getting him into T-ball and flag football. And I'm doing my best, Joe, to just stand back and let let this first year just all be about fun and just enjoy it and all that. And there's some times where I just can't help myself. I've got to, you know, get in a little, you know, coaching point here and there. And, you know, it is a constant battle because I don't want to be that dad. And so I am just sitting back and letting it go. But Jackson's having a lot of fun right now. And it's really funny to get into these, you know, little league games and things like that where you're just watching these kids. And, you know, it's just the beginning of it all.
Now, the text line also adding, well, Mr. Joe is also going to be my favorite. A couple people saying that. That, of course, a reference to Jamal Adams calling you Mr. Joe in an interview. It was fantastic. And speaking of Jamal Adams, speaking of the Seahawks veterans, I think there's a thought around several NFL teams, well, what if the veterans don't report to minicamp, don't report to OTAs, all of which are voluntary, not mandatory minicamp, but OTAs, all of which are voluntary. What's kind of a temperature check on that?
It's kind of an odd situation because at first it was like it's all about COVID, but it's very much not about COVID, in my opinion. I mean, this is going to be something, and I think it was J.C. Treader, one of the heads of the NFLPA, said that this isn't just a this year thing. This is going to be something we want to look into years down the road. And I think from a player's standpoint, they're all enjoying time at home, away from the facility, with their family, their hobbies, whatever. And they said, well, last year we did the virtual offseason program, and I got to have all this extra time with my loved ones, and then it worked great. And I don't think any of us would say at any point in the season, man, we're watching this game, and this is an ugly game because they didn't have OTAs. So that doesn't diminish the value of them, and I know every coach in the Seahawks building would tell you it still is just so much more valuable to have the in-person time, the workouts, and when you're building chemistry, when you're building cohesion with a new offensive coordinator, all of those things have value. But I understand the player's standpoint as well of, like, does it have to be that way just because we've always done it? Which is a fair argument in any time you're making a change. Like, the sole – if your only reason is it's because it's the only way we've ever done it, it's probably not the best case you can make. So I do think there are going to be guys who are local who are going and working out. I've heard that there are some veterans in the building who are working out just because they're around. So it's an interesting scenario. I wouldn't expect them, at least in bulk, to show up until the mandatory minicamp. I think they're going to, you know, it'd be kind of an odd, you release the statement saying, hey, we're not going to be a part of this. We're going to exercise our right. Also, Quandre Diggs, notably, that's this the biggest wrinkle is the guys who have money tied to it. And then for some teams, a lot of players do, because that's what they do when they make contracts. They bake in this clause of these voluntary workouts, you get paid for them. Quandre Diggs, who signed his extension with the Lions, is the only one who has any verbiage of that in his contract. So Seahawks players are sort of in the clear in that regard, where no one's losing any money except for Quandre Diggs. And I think I saw him reply to Michael Sean Dugar, basically saying, it's $100K, I'll make it back elsewhere, no big deal. So Quandre's not worried about it.
I'd love to be able to say that, you know, like,
right?
100K, like, it's all good. I'll make that up. Like, I'll find a way. It's all good.
Right? Exactly.
It would be incredible. Now, Joe, last thing that I have for you, you know, in regards to, you know, the Seahawks and what is kind of the new conversations that we've heard in terms of rookie minicamp and, you know, hearing from Pete Carroll is the idea that, you know, you're looking at your roster right now and that you feel like you have a roster that is ready to compete at a extremely high level, that you have all the pieces that you need. When you look at this roster, do you feel like it's pretty well put together and ready made? Or are you looking at this roster and saying that there are one or two obvious needs or moves that have to be made?
I think it's fine. I think they've done as much as they can do with the limited resources that they have. And I asked Pete Carroll, you know, did you consider, you know, restructuring Russell Wilson or Bobby Wagner? And basically said, we thought about it, but to this point, we haven't needed to. And I think given the moves they've made, getting Carlos Dunlap back in addition to Kerry Hyder, the draft picks, I think all of them were very shrewd. And I think it was nice for Seahawks fans to see them address positions of need and now have guys who could play sooner rather than getting cute and saying, oh, this guy was the best player on our board, but he happened to be a safety. So we took another safety. Now there's such a log jam there already. We're never going to see this guy. So I think the draft was successful. I think there's undrafted guys that are worth being excited about. I like the Gerald Everett addition. So I think the roster looks good. You're going to need some guys to step up, whether it's Daryl Taylor, whether it's, you know, one of your corners or two of your corners, certainly. You hope that Dwayne Eskridge is the immediate playmaker that they're hoping him to be. Again, I think we've had this conversation before. It all comes down to Shane Waldron. Like, how does that relationship work with him and Russell Wilson? Is his offense what Seattle needs it to be in terms of getting that short and intermediate passing game back in rhythm and on time where Russ is comfortable with it? Is the running game working? Are you maximizing what you have in your skill players? That to me is he is the great unknown where the roster's good. They're going to be a playoff team. But I do think it's Shane Waldron who's going to have a unique ability to take this team over the hump.
All right, time for some NFL headlines. Looking at Seahawks training camp, or excuse me, not training camp, OTAs. Going to take a look around the rest of the league. And you guys are in luck because all of these teams are NFC teams, which gives us a little bit of a preview of some future power rankings. Let's go to Atlanta. Matt Ryan thinks he has a lot of good football left. He said, quote, "I understand I'm not going to play forever, but I also have the mindset that I'm still playing really well and have a lot of good football in front of me." So my question for really the three of us, but Jake, I'll let you take it away first, is when you're looking at Atlanta as a real contender, to me, it's really unclear what they're going to do because they've got Matt Ryan, who we know can be great. They haven't been stellar lately. This defense kept falling apart. At the same time, had maybe one of the best draft classes of any team this past month.
Yeah, I still look at the Falcons as being a team that, sure, couldn't they be better? Yeah, but the best that I could see them being this year is maybe 500. I don't think that they take a huge leap forward and really start competing within this division. The New Orleans Saints, although they don't have Drew Brees and they could look very different on offense, they still got a pretty good defense. And obviously we know of Tampa and how good they are or will be this next year. So I think that Matt Ryan still has a lot of good football left in him. I really truly believe that with his style of play. He'll put up the numbers. He'll be a good player. But overall, the problem with Atlanta has not been Matt Ryan. It's been a lack of running game, and it's been a lack of defense. And if they can figure those things out, Atlanta will be more competitive.
I think Matt Ryan and Arthur Smith is a really interesting pairing. We saw how good Matt Ryan was under Kyle Shanahan. Arthur Smith was tremendous reviving the career of Ryan Tannehill. I think that's an interesting matchup. But this is a team that's flirting with the idea of trading Julio Jones. So sort of like the Green Bay Aaron Rodgers discussion, like what's Green Bay going to look like? Well, is Aaron Rodgers going to be there or not? It's right. Very similar in this regard. How's Matt Ryan going to be? Is he going to be MVP candidate? Well, I don't know, because is Julio Jones going to be there or not? That's what I think remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think if you're a Falcons fan, too, you're looking at it and you're saying, well, they got Kyle Pitts. And yeah, Kyle Pitts was dominating at Florida, one of the best prospects to come out in this year's draft. And I think you could look at it and say maybe the best athlete in the first round this year. He's also going to be a rookie. And guess what? College is different than the NFL. You don't know exactly what that transition is going to be like. I'm not selling Kyle Pitts short. Joe is giving me a weird look right now. I'm just saying.
I'm imagining being a Falcons fan who might never get to see a game with Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, and Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, that would be a bummer.
How brutal would that be as a Falcons fan?
It would be incredibly brutal. But what I'm saying is I think that, you know, people might be assuming like, oh, easy replacement. Take out Jones and put in Pitts and you've got a solution. And it's like, well, wait a minute.
Check out one of the greatest receivers of all time.
Yeah, really easy. All right, speaking of Matt Ryan, he's included in a list by Adam Sheehan of NFL.com about the 9 Dark Horse MVP candidates. In addition to Matt Ryan, you've got Carson Wentz now getting his second chance, this time with Indy, Kyler Murray of Arizona, Justin Herbert in another year after a fantastic rookie season with the Chargers. You've got Dak Prescott coming back from injury. Okay, it's all making sense. Derek Carr in there with the Raiders. Miles Garrett. Your only defensive player on here. You've got Jameis Winston, maybe can take the Saints somewhere. And then, last person on this list, Russell Wilson.
Stacey, who wrote this article again?
Adam Sheehan, and I would like to, in Adam's defense.
Adam Sheehan. Okay, so I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't Derek Carr's brother.
Because David Carr. Derek Carr would be number
David.
One.
Yeah, we've known.
He'd actually be the only person on the list.
It'd be like Dark Horse candidate.
We've seen him over last season, over the last couple seasons, him, you know, definitely, you know, throwing his brother some love in some rankings that he does not deserve to be in. So I was just curious, when it comes to, you know, Dark Horse MVP candidates, I don't know if Derek Carr comes foremost to mind, but outside of that, I do think that a lot of these guys absolutely have a chance. I wouldn't put Matt Ryan on there. I don't think Kyler Murray is a true MVP dark horse candidate because I do believe that the Cardinals yet again will fall apart in the second half of the season. But I am interested in guys like Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Herbert, if the Chargers defense can stay healthy. Justin Winston, not a chance. And Russell Wilson, it's fascinating that he's considered a dark horse when for the past couple years, he's been in that conversation. So I don't know if I'd necessarily consider him a dark horse, but at the end of the day, he hasn't been able to stay in that MVP conversation all the way through the season, so maybe he does qualify as that.
Yeah, to Adam Sheen's credit, I guess he does mention in the story, does Russell Wilson even belong? So I guess we'll give him a pass on that one. I think calling him a dark horse is just off base altogether. I'll take Dak Prescott and Justin Herbert. I like the top two guys listed there. I'm a big fan of both of them. Justin Herbert was an absolute stud. He's got a new play caller this year. I'm curious to see where things head in Los Angeles, but lots of reason for optimism in that organization.
Yeah, Russell Wilson is who I would have as not a betting favorite. Like, you're going to have Brady in there. You're going to have Mahomes in there.
Rodgers.
I'm sure that Lawrence is going to be in there, some kind of betting favorite or whatever. But you're right, Joe. He's not a dark horse, and you're right, Jake. I think that to what Sheehan says is like, well, look, he's going to be in a really tough division. I mean, two of these guys are playing in a division with Tom Brady, though. So, in the Buccaneers, who are returning 22 starters from their Super Bowl team. So, I see his argument. I'm not listing Russell Wilson as a dark horse, though I don't think he's going to be a betting favorite either. All right.
I think it's good value, though. I'm looking up real quick. Plus 2,000, and that's the same line as Murray and Herbert. So, for that value, I'm taking Russell Wilson every single time.
All right. 49ers GM John Lynch says that they have been upfront with Jimmy G, taking a page from, I guess, like a what not to do version of what the Packers have done with Brian Gutekunst, reportedly not telling Aaron Rodgers about anything that was going to happen. Imagine being Aaron Rodgers on draft night last year, seeing them in the first round take Jordan Love and thinking, excuse me? Like, whoops. I was not told about this. And so John Lynch says, I think Jimmy's got a really good trust in myself and Kyle, clearly Kyle Shanahan. I think you earn that, and I think from day one, we've been very upfront with Jimmy. When I went to Jimmy, I told him the truth. Like, look, we've made a decision that we're going to pursue a quarterback this offseason. You know, Jimmy, when you've played, you've been tremendous, and the record speaks to that. We feel like there's room for growth. The biggest thing has been it's hard to keep you on the field. He said Jimmy took it tremendously.
Well, that's great. That's good he took it tremendously, because I would hope that he would take it tremendously trying to keep himself on the roster for $27 million or whatever he is owed this year. I would be acting like, hey, all good. Just keep me on the roster and I'll get paid. But if you're looking at it from this perspective, I do think that good on them and the 49ers organization for being upfront with Jimmy Garoppolo, as John Lynch tells it. I mean, Jimmy G might have another story. But I think that when you look at the situation between the 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, the 49ers have more, I would be more lenient with them if they were not upfront with Jimmy G about the situation. And then looking at the Green Bay Packers and not being upfront with Aaron Rodgers, they're not even on the same playing field.
Like, it should have been the opposite. Like, it would have been okay if they didn't tell Jimmy G anything.
Yes, it would have been just fine. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, you made a lot of money. You've been able to get them to a Super Bowl, but you have not necessarily labeled yourself or cemented yourself as a true franchise quarterback. So 49ers handled it the right way. Green Bay got themselves into major hot water for handling it a very, very poor way, and they did it with Jimmy G, not even a true franchise quarterback.
All right, get your tickets to the station, because Hype Train is coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, we've got the Hype Train. Let's go to the station. I'll explain the rules here for Joe Fan, who is new to this game and to our show. Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest joining us for hour three of our show every Wednesday moving forward. Happy to have you, Joe.
It's great to be here.
How this works. The game is called Hype Train. I'm going to read you guys some of the biggest kind of bits of hype, the biggest trending topics in sports. And just like it is usually in sports, sometimes it's all just hype and it's nothing. It's hot air. And so you are going to tell me whether you're boarding the train, you're buying in, you believe in it, or whether you're going to let it pass. Are you ready?
I am. Let's do it.
Jake, you're going to lead us off here. Here is the first train. A big debate coming out of a game earlier this week where Yermin Mercedes hit a home run on a 3-0 count off a position player, but the White Sox up 15-4. His own skipper, Tony La Russa, said there would be consequences for that blatant violation of one of the unwritten rules of baseball, which has drawn plenty of ire. So here's the train. Tell me if you're boarding The unwritten rules of baseball are dumb.
They're just straight dumb?
Just straight dumb. It was going to be La Russa is wrong, but it's like, I don't know who's not boarding that train.
Okay. I am going to board this hype train. Okay. I am boarding this hype train because I think that the unwritten rules of baseball, everybody's forgot them. I think this new generation of baseball players, they don't pay attention to the unwritten rules of baseball. The only way that they were good and fun was when everybody understood the standard. And when you broke that code, you knew exactly what you were going to get. And in today's baseball, I don't think that those unwritten rules have the same weight or carry the same standard as they once did.
I'm also boarding the train. I think unwritten rules are silly in any sport, but there's so much pearl clutching in baseball. And I mentioned the this is always the way it's been. It's just the worst argument for avoiding progress and change in a different mentality. I'm all for not showing up your opponent, especially when it's a blowout. And Mercedes didn't do that. I mean, he just ran around the bases. But asking someone to not play the game just because you simply gave up is quite silly to me. I kind of compare it to like feigning injuries in soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's so hard for me to get into soccer as like kind of a casual soccer fan when you see that. They get up and they run off and they're all good. It's the same thing for a casual baseball fan. They see stuff like this, like, that's silly and outdated and antiquated, and I'm kind of over it. I think baseball is boring. And
yeah.
So it's hard to argue with that.
Imagine explaining it to friends. I have a lot of friends that are not sports fans. And I'm imagining explaining this concept to my best friend, Katie. If I turned to her and I said, oh, he's going to get in trouble for that one, she'd be like, what do you mean he's going to get in trouble?
It's crazy how mentally tough professional athletes have to be to get there. But how fragile their egos can be.
Like, oh, 1,000%.
That's a baffling thing to me.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I really don't understand that.
Jake,
but,
I don't know anyone like
that. Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess they are.
All right, next train. More OTAs are coming up next week, and we've got minicamp next month. There's one name, though, that's going to overshadow all three drafted rookies, Daryl Taylor. Here's the train. Tell me if you're boarding Daryl Taylor going to overshadow those three rookies.
Ooh, this is a really good one because I think that it's a strong possibility that it could. But I am not boarding this train. Why, Stacey? Because what D. Eskridge, what he does is going to be very, very important to this offense. As we have talked about, the defense is going to be important in terms of how they develop, how they grow, but this is still going to be an offensive-driven team. They will get to the Super Bowl by how this offense is performing, functioning against very good high-level talent and high-level defenses that they will face not only within their division, but many times through the regular season. They need this offense to be big, and D. Eskridge is part of that equation.
I'm boarding this hype train because you have to look at what went into the pick. He was a second-round pick. They traded up to get him. It was their biggest position of need. They said they considered taking him in the first round. And so when you look at everything that was invested, they got in a weird year where prospects couldn't travel. They got him in the building before the COVID shutdown, did a full medical evaluation with their staff. The entire organization greenlit this pick. There's so much pressure on Daryl Taylor to pan out. He is the story of the offseason as it pertains to these first-year players taking part in these offseason programs.
I'm also going to board this train because I think that almost any good thing from him is going to seem like a monumental step forward, quite literally, for a lot of people who just didn't see him play at all. So I think any update is going to be newsworthy. All right, next train here. Now, of course, this one I'm going to say it's not fun. It's not great, but take a long, hard look in the mirror because here is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Mariners are going to be no hit again.
They are going to make history.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Yes, I am going to board this hype train because as I see this team right now, I think that you're going to have, as I've talked about it, peaks and valleys. I think that this team has moments where they are going to be extremely hot. They are going to be fun to watch. It's going to be really entertaining. But you know what? Those valleys are going to be really, really cold. It's going to be tough. And I think we've seen that. And I would not be surprised if they get no hit again.
Yeah, I'm boarding it as well. And my one point of contention with Brandon Gustafson, the B. Gustafson,
the
only one, who was tremendous as a guest. I love listening to him on my way to the studio here. But when he said that there was too much talent in the lineup for it to be this bad, I would disagree. There are four guys in the lineup right now that can potentially scare you as an opponent. But when you're a lineup regularly throwing out Luis Torrens, Tom Murphy, Sam Haggerty, Dylan Moore, Donovan Walton, bless those guys' hearts. But, like, there's going to be a chance that you're going to get no hit again if the top guys aren't producing.
I mean, when you look at it, it's kind of cool. You know what I mean?
No,
that's a hard record to set.
Stacey,
cool in
what
way?
You know, in the way that something that hasn't been done before is neat.
So would it have been neat if the Seahawks, you know, gave up the most, what was it? What were they on pace for? The most pass?
Most yards given up?
Yeah, I mean, you're in the record books, and that's forever. So look at it that way. All right, you've got questions. We've got answers. Get your questions in now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything, whatever it is, text it now, 710-710, What I Need to Know, right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Here's how it works. You send in your question, any question, to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. And then I read them and I choose which ones I like and I get to be the ruler. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, too much.
You feel
control
what I'm saying? Okay, no.
Yeah.
Let's start with this one. Which snack can you always go through without thinking about it? So, which snack could you finish off and then you just realize, like, oh, it's taken me 10 minutes and now I've ate this entire bag of pop chips. Mine would be those air pop chip where it's like you tell yourself it's a diet chip and it's not. Yeah. They've tricked you. Like you got it from Trader Joe's, so you're like, oh, it's diet. It's not though.
Any bag of chips.
Any bag of chips.
Any size. Any brand. Any type. They're gone.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
I think too, I'm going to list off a couple that I think really could get you. This does fall in the chip category, Joe. Pringles.
Oh, for sure.
Pringles, I mean, you're dead in the water upon arrival. The moment that you open that thing up, like, you got to have some serious discipline. Like, you're going to be dropping a bead of sweat because you decided to put the chip down and to walk away from this.
Has there ever been a better slogan than "Once you pop, the fun don't stop"?
Never.
Because
I don't think so.
Those are gone.
It couldn't be more true. I'll give you that. And then I'm going to say a sleeve of Oreos. Like, Oreos are so easy to go through. And then the last but not least, I'm going to say Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its are one of those things that are very, very easy to just keep going and not stop.
From the 253, lots of talk around the Seahawks offense with their new OC and Eskridge, but what about the defense? Will they pick up where they left off in the latter half of the 2020 season? My answer is no. I think that it takes any defense a while to get going, especially if you continue to have more time off from what would be a regular offseason of preparation. I also think that part of that turnaround, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, is that you were facing awful offenses. It was genuinely an improvement, but maybe not as amazing as it looked on paper.
I could hear any argument. I think I would lean towards, yes, they can continue to be an above-average defense. The Jaron Reed thing's a bummer because this defense. The fact that they got over a contract dispute where he ended up betting on himself, then losing money on it. Like, put him on this defensive line, and you're looking at this defensive line saying, could be one of the best in football. Al Woods, no offense to him, but he isn't Jaron Reed. So that's kind of like all these things you feel good about, but man, that's just a bummer that couldn't work out.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm glad you said that, Joe, because that is, couldn't be more true. And so if there's any hole on their roster, it is the depth behind Puna Ford at that three technique position. I know they can fill it with LJ Collier, and I know they can fill it with guys like Kerry Hyder Jr., but Kerry Hyder Jr. played his best ball at the five technique defensive end position. I want to see him there. That's where he generated his 10.5 sacks. But when it comes to LJ Collier, it's still unproven. We still don't know what he can be, and he got better last year, but how much better? It definitely wasn't on the level of Jaron Reed in that production, so I do agree with you on that. And I think that when you look at this defense as a whole, they played against some of the worst offenses in the NFL. And I think the standard is that they are an above-average defense. If they can be a top 15 defense in this league, I think they give them a great chance to have another great, successful year and to potentially get even deeper into the playoffs than what they've been over the last four or five seasons.
Now, this one is for Joe on our show for the first time from the 425. What I need to know, Joe, do you like baked beans on hot dogs? And also, what is your least favorite ice cream flavor and why is it sherbet?
I will eat green beans, and I like edamame. Other than that, no beans. I'm out. Go to Mexican, and it's
that's
all fine. Rice, no beans.
Oh, incredibly aggressive.
I only have hot dog, or I only have ketchup on my hot dog. So I'm out on beans altogether.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, big wow, texture wow. guy, and beans are gross.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting.
That is reckless, but that's fine.
What,
I mean, it's
what are your
opinion.
Thoughts on what are your thoughts on like rainbow sherbet ice cream? Not like oh. the regular store brand. Not like
it's
Safeway,
good,
but like I'm talking about.
I need chocolate in it. I'm like, give me something with chocolate. Sherbet's good. Okay. It has its place, but like it's like a one off. Okay. Like this is a nice refresher.
I'll say this: it's not weird if a child's favorite flavor of ice cream is sherbet. You know,
it's not weird.
It's not weird if a child's favorite flavor of ice cream is sherbet.
Sure.
Stacey, I know what you're doing. I know you're taking a shot at me. but you know what? I don't care because you know what,
Jake, is that your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Yes.
It is.
Isn't that
it
weird?
Is amongst the my
Jake
favorite.
Likes
yes.
sherbet, Uncrustables.
I do love Uncrustables.
Okay. God, so
I eat a, yes, I eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day in the morning.
God. Toast, are you kidding me?
You toast the bread.
Are you? Is
toast
it Mel
bread,
Jr.?
PB&J.
You eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich
every morning.
Single morning for breakfast.
Crunchy peanut butter, slightly burned bread.
Yeah. See, Stacey.
And then you switch up the jams.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. Is if you're going to come at me with my food takes, I'm willing to bet that Joe is going to favor my side of things more than yours. I just have a feeling.
I don't think so.
I do.
Whoa, really whoa, do. Whoa. Joe puts ketchup on his hot dog. Hot dogs are cream cheese or mustard only from
oh my
Chris
God,
and
that sounds horrific.
Wow, wow, wow. What I need to know, oh gosh, I just lost it. Have you ever been in a situation where you were introducing two people and forgot one of their names? No, but everyone's been in a moment where, well, there's two sides of the same coin, where someone says hi to you and you don't remember who they are or forgot their name, so you have to see how far into the conversation you can get. And then another one is when someone waves and it's actually waving at someone behind you and you are vain enough to think it's you. I've never experienced that. I've heard about it.
This has happened to me. We're out and about with your friends and you meet somebody and you realize 30 minutes in that you forgot their name. And so instead of asking for their name, you bring a friend over and say, hey, here's my friend. And they obviously introduce themselves and say, that's their name.
Yep.
And you go. And then no one's the wiser.
How to do. Okay.
But no one's the wiser. If you get in that situation, then the easy way to get around it is you bring somebody else over, you introduce them, say, hey, this is
Eric. But
what
if they don't say their name and they're waiting for you to introduce them?
They will.
See,
every time.
They're
not going to say their name to this person they're meeting?
No, they're going to be like, well, Joe's going to introduce me.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, no. You have to make that introduction first. I agree with Joe. I've done this many a times where I have completely blanked on their name, but you just go out of the way and you basically like kind of step back. It's like a group text thread, right? Like you send a group text and you're like, hey, I'm just connecting you guys together. I'm going to let you take this conversation from here. You do the same thing. You introduce one person, you kind of step back and let them take it from there, and they'll figure it out. You get to remember their name.
What I need to know, has Joe met Brian? No, I don't think you guys have met.
Who's Brian?
My boyfriend.
Yeah.
Wow.
Her astronaut boat.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I'm a reverend and I can officiate the wedding. So.
Oh, that's great.
I'm ordained.
Wonderful.
I've
Fantastic.
Got one wedding under my belt.
All right.
And they're still together. So that means you and Brian are set for love.
Meant to be. All right. He is Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest. Joe, tell people where they can find you.
Joe_Fan, two N's on Twitter. Find my work at NBCSportsNorthwest.com. And the Talking Seahawks podcast comes out once a week.
All right. He will
nice.
Be joining us once a week on Wednesday's final hour. Not next week. We got a Mariners game, but
Get
every week after
hit.
That.
Get
Let's
a
go.
Hit.
All
Let's
right.
do this.
That'll do it for us today. I'm Stacey Ross. He's Jake Heaps. Thank you, Joe Fan, for joining us. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.